Hey, everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Jaron. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
I'm awesome.
What? Yeah, that's a lie. How are you, Paul?
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty good.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. You threw me off here. I've had a lot of weird stuff happen the last couple days in my life. And
have there been changes in the Xandarian household?
The Xandarians have added one. We're a plus one couple now.
Yeah.
My wife delivered the baby on New Year's Day.
Yep.
At exactly 9:02:10. So apparently we have to name our kid Brenda or Tori now.
Brandon.
Taylor was born at, it's a girl, by the way, a girl named Taylor. I know, it's crazy, crazy stuff. People are freaking out. They're like, I thought it's a boy with that name. Taylor was born at here in New York at 9:02:10, 9 o'clock in the evening on New Year's Day. So it was an experience to always remember, Paul. It was an experience, the whole thing.
Were you present for the delivery?
I was.
I won't be graphic or crass about this, but I will say that it is a life-changing event.
Oh, yes, it is. It is. And
not just for her.
Yeah, no. It was something else.
Yeah.
to say the least.
It's like watching the reaction videos to that Two Girls, One Cup video.
That's exactly what it is. So she was in labor for 21 hours. So that was not fun for her.
Yes.
That baby did not want to come out.
Oh, yeah. That's the one area where my wife really lucked out. Her two kids popped right out.
So that day, I think you saw the tweets. I went to that German place.
Yeah.
And I got the Jaeger Schnitzel, and I barely had any because I had the steak tartare. So I brought the Jaeger Schnitzel for her, and I'm like, this is it. This is how you're going to get, deliver this baby.
This is what's going to kick it off.
And it did. So it was the Jaeger Schnitzel. It's all the fried veal. Yeah, fried veal is what does the trick, I guess.
I told you to get the veal.
You did. And I did. And look now, I got a baby.
That's so funny.
So between that and CES and my wrestling podcast that I'm doing, I have not slept at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talking about CES. Guys, we were going to do the show on Tuesday, but since so much is happening and I was really expecting, oh my God, these groundbreaking announcements at CES this year. So I was like, you know what, Paul, let's wait. Yeah, it did not work out too well because it's, I've been doing this how many years now? 8 years almost? This is one of the most lacklustered CESs. And I
think we got to be honest, though. CES is almost always lackluster, It really is. We all pretend this is exciting and everything.
You know when it's exciting? I'll tell you. There's always one or two very specific products for me that I like. Like they'll announce a camera that I would want to get this year. They'll announce, something new in the TVs that, okay, well, if you're looking for a TV, this is something that you would want.
It's just not happening, though.
Apparently HDR is the future of television.
HDR.
Well, that's what that's the selling point this year, HDR TVs.
Sure.
So do you want to mess with the color of the television? Do you want to do, high dynamic range color? Like, is that something that benefits you?
So what is that going to do? In other words, if you were to look at the movie, the new Mad Max movie that came out last year is a really good example, right? It is one of the most high color, vibrant, deep black kind of, images you've ever seen. It's highly processed. If you go back and look at the original footage, it's very bland and, gray looking where they were. Is that what this does? Like it takes everything that's on TV and just makes it
super
explosion of color? Because if that's what it is.
So there was a demo at CES that I saw and they were showing two television. It was two Samsungs, exactly the same Samsung. And one had HDR enabled and one had it off. And the HDR enabled one was just, it popped more.
Yeah.
So it pretty much, it's almost like, when your LCD display loses the backlight? You know what I mean by that? Like if the
it's
LEDs, almost,
it's darker, but the colors are brighter.
Well, no, the colors in general, it's brighter. Like the demos that I've seen, and I'm sure someone's going to tell me I'm totally wrong in this and it's this and this and this. But from what I have witnessed, right, from these, from these sets. So you have two displays. Like let's say it's a darker movie, right? Like let's say it's like, trying to think of a movie that's like set in the dark. You know what? Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, right? It's like a dark film. Like, it's shot a little gray.
Yeah.
A movie like that would benefit because it makes everything a little brighter. It's almost like the backlighting is up a little bit. It's weird.
What you're describing, though, is a very particular kind of thing. And so just automatically applying this to everything isn't necessarily such a great idea. You know, some movies and TV shows even are very carefully color calibrated.
Yeah. So do you want,
or
do
very
you want to,
specifically,
you're, you technically know, just doing color processing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you're doing.
I assume, honestly, TVs probably already do some form of color. I mean, even screens from 5-7 years ago have, you know, color modes, you know, video game, you know, movie, whatever.
I'm sure you're going to get a better picture. It just makes it a little bit more realistic.
Yeah. It's a little bit, right. That's what I mean. It's not like HD TV 2.0 or whatever. It's, I don't know.
It's a weird time. I mean, the television industry is really not caught on, and these 4K televisions are not really selling well because there's no 4K content, or barely any, for most people that could access. That's apparently Sturgis is happening outside of my house again. The Sturgis rally is coinciding in front of my house. 50,000 motorcycles just showed up in front of my house. It's amazing. That's all I'm hearing.
So, must be the guy who lives down the street from me.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy next door to me. So we're going to go down some of the stuff happening at CES. Some other news, too. I don't know if you added anything. I tried to follow on Therat.com.
I didn't add anything, but I you know, I looked at it. There's not much going on. You know, I mean, there's a couple of things here I think that are really important to talk about. But as far as the show generally, it's like, you know.
I feel like it's every year, you know, every year just gets companies are realizing that they don't need a CES.
Well, I don't know. It's bigger than ever. That's the thing. The show's humongous. I don't know. I feel like CES is where we send people, you know, tech reporters to die. You know, it's just, I don't know. You know, for me, I mean, look, I'm obviously interested in consumer electronics. I write about consumer technology by and large. I really care about PCs a lot. A lot of PCs have been announced this week. None of them are super interesting, just to be completely honest about it. Not because they're not good. I mean, the next version of the ThinkPad X1 Carbon is by definition something awesome that I want to review and I can't wait to see it. But it's the next version of the ThinkPad X1 Carbon, which was awesome last year too. New versions of HP's, Dell's, Samsung, Acer, you know, all of these companies have new computers. There's nothing to really grab attention. I mean, a lot of things that look like Surfaces, a lot of 2-in-1s and convertible type PCs. Honestly, from the perspective of kind of a Microsoft thing, the thing I'm not seeing here are the unexpected things. You know, like new computers, okay. Where are the tablets? Like, where are the mini tablets? Like, that part of the market has just disappeared.
Yeah, and remember, 2 years ago, it was all about tablets.
I know. Like, I don't know what happened there. They just not, you know, not selling. They
don't
work.
Well, you know, the Samsung, like the companies like Samsung and HP and Lenovo and Microsoft and Apple. Like, Apple and Microsoft have not been there for, I mean, Microsoft was there last year, but they haven't really done anything big for a while. And then companies like Samsung and HTC, they have their own platforms and their own events that they could capitalize on, so they didn't get mixed in the shuffle.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously for mobile phones, even though we have actually seen a couple of phone type announcements, the big stuff is happening next month at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona.
And that's the big one. Yeah,
that's the big one. And, you know, Microsoft focused stuff. I mean, we have, you know, Build coming up and they have an enterprise oriented show later in the summer. And, you know, Apple does their own event. Obviously, Samsung obviously does its own thing every single time they have a major flagship type phone release. So it's weird. I mean, there's a lot of noise, you know.
Tremendous amount of noise. I think this is great for like the TVs and, you know, the turntables and basic consumer electronics, but, you know.
I guess. But, you know, again, there's no major trend that's kicking it this year. You know, like you said, 4K TVs, there's more of them. There's not enough content. So it's not really super clear what's the right thing to do there. You know, at some point, the TV up in my living room is just going to die and we're going to get another TV, but it's almost certainly not going to be a 4K TV because it just doesn't make sense. For us, I guess I should think.
So a couple of things that I saw, and then we'll go down the list. I'm not going to go into any, you know, we'll go down the specific stuff that kind of stood out to me. But let's see with the televisions, right? Samsung had their latest thing this year. Apparently, everybody was doing home automation. That's the big deal. It's home automation, drones, home automation drones, the HDR televisions, and there was something else, God. I got it in my notes here. Let me see here. And virtual reality, VR. Those were the big guys.
VR is something I'm very interested in this year.
You are. You're back into it.
Yeah.
I thought you hated it.
What do you mean
it?
Back into it?
I thought you hated it. You thought it was a joke. Well, no, that was me. Sorry.
No, I think Google Cardboard is awesome.
Yeah.
I've been talking about that a lot.
I sent mine back, by the way. All the VR headsets that I bought, all 40 of them that I purchased last week, I sent them all back.
Yeah. So, I mean, Oculus Rift is interesting. It's not a mainstream consumer device by any stretch of the imagination. It requires a $1,000+ computer, and it is itself $600. And so we're not talking about something totally inexpensive. But it's here. You know, it's finally happening. And the types of games you're going to see on an Oculus Rift are going to vastly outperform anything on, obviously, like a little cardboard device, which is just silly, or a a HoloLens, which is, of course, a different kind of device.
It says, in order to get the Oculus to work, minimum specs are an NVIDIA GTX 970 or an AMD R9290, Intel i5 CPU, 8 gigs of RAM, HDMI 1.3 compatible, USB, and then Windows 7. So, yeah, okay, let's say $500 you're going to spend for that, plus another. Oh, they're offering a PC bundle for $1,500. The Oculus and a PC. Listen, I think this is cool. Like, I think it's really cool if it works the way it's supposed to. But who's buying this box? You know, who's buying the Oculus?
Well, you know, high-end gamers, people who want, you know, are always looking for the next big thing. I would say that for myself, you know, I'm into shooters and very particular shooters, obviously. I think Oculus Rift is one of, or I should say, I think shooters are one of the things that Oculus Rift could, you know, be very good at. So I could, you know, I get it. I mean, I used one of the prototype Oculus Rifts probably a couple of years ago now.
Yeah, it's like 2 years old. I used the developer kit, right?
Yeah, and you know, it was a very familiar, if I'm remembering correctly, it might have been an Unreal-based environment, Quake or Unreal, but I think it was Unreal. And, but 3D world, whatever. I got a little queasy using it, and I play shooters basically every day, so... You know, on a computer screen. I don't know. I'm nervous about that aspect of it.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, the concept behind the VRs are pretty cool. Another thing was like 3D virtual reality cameras. That was a big part of CES this year. But when it comes to the VRs, you know, it like the Samsung one that I had is powered by Oculus. It's cool, but it doesn't really work. Like it works for about 5 minutes, and then it makes your phone overheat. I sent it back. It was $100. I got the money back. I played with it for about a week, and you know, I'm like, oh, okay. I threw it in the corner. I'm like, I don't want this. So my wife was like, why aren't you returning? I'm like, you know what? That's a great idea. Let me return it. So I just sent it back to Amazon, put it back in the box, and boom, done. I was never going to use it again. I mean, I think that's a cool part of these devices. You know, you use it for a little bit, and then you're done.
Well, I mean, the hope with something like Oculus Rift is that you don't. To do that, right? You know, you spend all that money and this becomes a thing that you do, that the next time some big game comes out, you experience it that way rather than doing it the traditional way.
The VR stuff, right? You have a company like Oculus, but in reality, their entire business model is banking on the fact that Sony and Microsoft don't screw them and make their own VR headsets for their next gen consoles or in addition for their current gen consoles, which I expect Microsoft to do it in the next 7 years at least. HoloLens is a great example of that. They're already working on the project. Yeah. So how difficult would it be in the next 5 years to make this, bring this down to a consumer level device and have it as an addition on your Xbox?
Well, if Oculus Rift is successful enough, you know, Microsoft or Sony partners with them.
I see Sony partnering more than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, you know, that's the solution. That becomes the solution. I mean,
sure.
I think that, you know, it's early days. This is a lot like 3D in movie theaters. You know, there are competing standards. It's not clear that this is something that most consumers want, or in this case, most gamers might want. You know, how do you introduce this kind of thing? I think of Kinect in the way that Kinect hit midstream in the Xbox 360 lifecycle. So it was an add-on at first. And I actually think if Microsoft could swing it in this, you know, just from a Microsoft point of view, or Sony, I guess, they should release VR as an add-on for the existing consoles if they can in the next couple of years, just to kind of see what the reception is.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, obviously,
the future of Kinect was the wrong device at the wrong time, right?
Well, remember when Kinect first came out, it was the best-selling consumer electronics device of all time.
Yeah.
That first year especially, they sold tens of millions of those things. And I'm sure that guided part of their decision to make Kinect, you know, an integrated part of Xbox One. And then, of course, because of the cost, they had to scale that back. And also, actually, the utter lack of interest in Kinect titles. So I don't know. It's not clear whether this is going to be a niche, you know, a little dedicated part of the gaming community that really needs this stuff. And we should think outside of games too, right? I mean, what are the other applications that you might come up with for VR? I'm not really sure.
I don't know. I think VR, we have a long way to go with this, obviously. And right now it's clunky. It doesn't really work the way that it's supposed to. But I mean, you could design an entire living room. I mean, we saw the demo with the HoloLens stuff, right? You could put this thing on and team up with Pottery Barn, for example, the Pottery Barn app. You just press the button and it puts the couch where the couch is supposed to be.
So VR it's not the same, right? So augmented reality, you could look at the room and have stuff be in the room with you. That's augmented reality. Virtual reality, it would have to recreate the room in its display, and then you could move things around in the virtual version of the room. It's not the room. It's not the real room. You know what I mean? So if you do something like Google Street View, where you're standing looking through a Google Cardboard device or whatever virtual reality thing, and you kind of spin around, you know, you're looking at something that is typically a still image, although there are moving video type things like this. Typically a still image, though. And for the thing you're describing, that's kind of enough, you know.
Yeah.
And the other problem with VR is that you're not in the virtual world, so you need some way to move around in that world, because you can sit down or lay down or whatever and be still, but still navigate around. And so you have to have some other way of navigating, like a controller or whatever. Whereas in augmented reality, you're in the actual space. And so you as a person, like, walk physically around the space. And so they're different. They can, in some cases, they can do the same things, or they can, you know, be used to solve the same problem, I guess.
So we had the VR stuff, obviously, that we mm-hmm. discussed. Oculus Rift is going to cost $600 and shipping in March for people who are interested in this device.
What do you think about the price?
It's a little
pricey. You
seem
not convinced on VR, period.
I'm not convinced for the time being, but $600 for a second gen, I guess, right? With plus you got to spend another $500, or if you don't have the PC, if you do, then you know, that's your expense. But spend that kind of money, it better work really well.
Yeah. Yeah, and we won't know for months.
Yeah, we won't know until March.
The earliest buyers are going to get it in March, I think.
Yeah,
or was it May? Maybe it was May.
March. Yeah.
So it's going to be a while. If you order it now, you can't get it till June.
Something that I really liked, okay, from CES mm-hmm. that was shown off, and every year they show this off for the last 5 or 6 years, and every year the technology gets better and better, and it's the paper-thin rollable OLED panels.
Yeah.
And LG showed one off. It's a concept, obviously, right now, but I'm looking at this thing. It was an 18-inch rollable OLED panel. I mean, it looks phenomenal. It's super paper thin. LG is planning on using this in their TVs.
Yeah.
Like, make it very, very thin and just have it, like, pretty much you're just going to glue this thing on your TV, or, like, it's going to attach with, like, epoxy or something, and you're going to take it off and put it wherever you want. But The thing that is amazing about this is that this is the technology for the next generation Apple Watch that everybody's, you know, thinking is going to happen. All these smartwatches. This is the next version of this.
Well, phones too, right? I mean,
phones also, yeah.
It should be anything. You know, this might solve a problem that people probably don't think about too much. You know, they have these curved displays, and they have curved displays that are for computer screens, and then they have curved displays that are TVs. You know, they're very large curved displays. And the problem with the curved display is that if you're not sitting right dead center looking at it, they're terrible. They're really hard to see. You know, this is some kind of an effect that it has. It doesn't really work very well. So if you think about a living room situation, if you're not dead front and center, a large curved display, it's not very good. And I wonder if they couldn't tailor a TV so that if you're just – it's a couple of you or just you and you're right in front of it and you were home watching a movie at night and you could say, curve it, give me that immersive experience. And then when you have people over for a football game, maybe you have it go flat.
Yeah,
so everyone can see.
I mean, this is the coolest part of this. I mean, the fact that this technology has gotten so much better. I mean, a couple of years ago, we were talking just black and white, you know, e-ink displays that were able to do this. And now we're doing this high-res.
But we still don't see any of these out in the world, right? I mean, this is still not a mainstream consumer technology of any kind, not even on the e-ink stuff.
The LG panel, it's 3 millimeters thick.
Yeah.
Displays 1,200 by 810. 1200 by 810 pixel resolution.
That's not great.
No, it is not great. So this is not a very high res display.
It's an 18 inch panel though, so it's it's still not great.
And they're planning on using this in their 55 inch displays. So, I mean, start off small, guys. I would like this on my wrist. You know, these rollable displays. I thought this was pretty cool, and this is a good example of CES, where they're showing technology every year and just improving a little by little, little by little, little by little. That's really what's happening here. But when it comes to television displays, at this point, 4K is not taken off. 8K is around the corner. We don't. The cable companies haven't picked the format yet. They're having all these different issues. But the way that they're going to be selling these TVs is by adding more and more stuff. Like Samsung is doing the smart hub stuff. So pretty much you could control your entire house with the Samsung panel. The Samsung television. I don't know. Do you think the living room is the hub for that? Or is it your phone?
I mean, I think there should be different ways to do it. I think the phone is an obvious one. But I think, you know, sometimes you're sitting down in front of a big screen and just having a control panel, and it's not too bad. I think that when you're in the house, that may make more sense. You kind of set things up that way. But then you're out in the world. I mean, a lot of times that home automation stuff, it's not so much about, although, the, you know, have the shades do something at a certain time of day or with a certain kind of light or whatever it is. A lot of times the home automation stuff is when you're away. We're coming home a little later than we expected tonight. Let's turn the lights on and make it look like someone's there. Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff. And obviously you'd want to do that with your phone.
Okay, so let's talk about technology for the sake of technology, right? Did you see the Samsung fridge?
Yeah.
Why do
the reviled Samsung fridge?
Why do we need? Yeah, and everybody's talking about it, like it's the greatest device ever. They put a display on this thing. Why do you? Who needs a giant 21-inch 1080p display?
I know it's crazy. It's like if Tesla made a refrigerator. That's like a crazy iPad looking thing.
It has a camera on the inside of the fridge, so you could check what's inside.
Well, right. So Microsoft, years and years ago, and this is probably more than 10 years ago, I'm not going to get this term right, but there's, they have like RFID tags.
Yeah.
And I think they're really, and maybe those are the really tiny things. And so you could even put one like on an orange, you know, or a piece of fruit, any kind of piece of fruit, whatever. The point of these things is twofold. In a store, if you've registered yourself with the store, you could be in an auto pay thing. And so you put a bunch of groceries in your bags, put them in a cart, and you walk through the door. And just the act of walking through the door, they ring everything up because they know how many oranges and how many milks and whatever you bought, and you pay for it automatically through your account. But now you bring it home, and now you get this is the Microsoft Home bit, where everything that passes in and out of the fridge is scanned in the same fashion.
Yeah.
And they can sense the levels of things as well. And so, for example, with something like milk, when milk gets down to a certain thing, It could add milk to a shopping list that you may have that's electronic on OneNote or something. It could even automatically order food as it gets down to a certain point. So there's, you can sort of see where that's going. Using a, like having a camera in a fridge so that you can see what's in the fridge, like it's on the other side of the door.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
You know
about
what?
Here?
You know that's what? You tell.
It's crazy.
You're at work, and you got to make a casserole tonight, Paul.
Yeah, yeah.
And you say, but I can't remember if I have the ingredients.
But that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. With RFID, you know the ingredients that are in the house, not just the fridge,
no,
but
no, you want to see what's in. You want to see what's in the fridge.
Well, even do something like this. Like you open the fridge and you say, hey, you know, we have some meat in the freezer of some kind, some amount. What can we make with this? And then the automated system in the house, knowing what's in the house, because again of these RFID tags, I'm sorry if that's not the right term, but can kind of scan all the stuff and say, here's the stuff you can make with the ingredients you actually have on hand.
Yeah.
And then you choose from there. That's interesting. You know, I think the Samsung thing that you're talking about now is just step one of 100 toward what we're talking about and what Microsoft has been talking about for a long, long time.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of the future, the Isaac Asimov,
The future. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the Jetsons. Go in a machine and have it dress you and come right out. Yeah.
Yep.
It's amazing. I mean, do you think a lot of this technology that we're doing now, is it, and this is veering off a little bit, but like the Asimov stuff, right? I mean, it's amazing what he had envisioned in that, in those years.
Oh yeah, no, all the, and not just him, but you know, Arthur C. Clarke and Ray Bradbury and you know, Jerry Pournelle and Larry Niven and all those guys, all the greats of science fiction. You know, everyone talks about, you know, in 20,000 Under the Leagues, you know, they invented this and this and this, and but you know, this stuff's been going on. It's not just, you know, back that far. I mean, even last 100 years or whatever, last 50 years, a lot of neat stuff has been kind of pre-invented or pre-seen or, you know, thought up. And it's like, as we kind of implement it all now, it's like, oh, this is really, Apple's really smart. And it's like, yeah, they didn't really invent any of this stuff. Not really. I mean, they made it happen and that's neat. But yeah, a lot of this stuff, ideas have been around for a long time.
I mean, you look at some of the things like the replicator, right, from Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's real.
Yeah. Well,
3D printing.
What's the Star Trek Next Generation introduced that concept of the, I'm going to get it wrong because of HoloLens, the holodeck.
Oh, the virtual.
Which is a virtual reality environment, right?
Yeah.
Super immersive, right?
The virtual display device.
Yeah. I mean, that's a combination of augmented reality and virtual reality because you're really running around in it.
Well, Star Trek communicator, right?
Yeah.
That's a cell phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing. But do you think the technology is based off of that? Like a lot of the stuff that we read, you know, the Jerry Pournelle stuff and the Isaac Asimov stuff, like the technology that they envisioned, are we trying to build on that concept?
Well, I mean,
I think to some extent.
It all feeds on each other. I mean, it's, you know, there's no, you can't go back to one. You can't say H.G. Wells is the source of everything or Jules Verne is the, you know, it's. As we go forward in time, it kind of branches up and builds and builds and builds. I mean, something like, HoloLens, the guys that made HoloLens, I'm sure they had holodeck in the back of their
mind.
I'm
sure.
You know, I'm sure they did.
I mean, it's amazing to me when you look back, and CES is a great example of that, you know, like the crazy stuff that you see and the things that are just happening. I mean, you look at the Jetsons and they had a robot vacuum and we have a Roomba now, you know, like even that, they're like the dumbest things. They had flat screen. Didn't they have flat screen TVs in the Jetsons?
Oh, probably.
I think
the wall screens and everything.
Yeah.
By the way, I meant to put, you know, you just reminded me of something. I meant to put this in the show notes. Let me see if I can find this. I found an interview. If I can't find this, this is going to be I can't find it. From 2011. Mm-hmm. I don't know who it was with. This must have appeared on a website somewhere. And it was sort of like, at the time, this is how long ago this was. What is your primary phone? And I said, Samsung Focus S, running Windows Phone 7.5. Among these questions, I just kind of read through this. I couldn't remember what this was from. You know, I literally have no idea where this appeared. But let me see if I can find this. It's kind of a future thing. We've talked about this. And this will be very familiar to you. But someone asked, what will define whatever the next wave is in technology? Mm-hmm. And I said, I feel like we've done the smaller, thinner, lighter thing to its logical extreme, and that the next wave isn't about gadgets or stuff, but rather the radical integration of technology into day-to-day objects, meaning house walls that are displays and hidden speakers, immersive environments in cars, restaurants, and offices, all of which are controlled naturally. And at the time, I said, I make fun of Kinect, but it's important to see this for what it really is, the incredibly unsophisticated predecessor of tomorrow's Skynet Terminator robots. in other words, natural interactions are huge. Seamless integration of technology into everything, which is what we talk about. We always talk about you get in a plane and there's a screen and you're typing on the keyboard tray that's provided by the plane, and by virtue of some biometric thing you've signed into it, you get all your stuff. This should be in hotels. It should be in the driverless cars of the future, the Uber cars, where someone's driving you around. It should be everywhere. When I do a home swap, and if I was around 50 years from now and we were swapping homes with someone in Europe, I wouldn't bring any technology with me. I wouldn't have to. Everything I need would be there, because they would have all the screens and the stuff. And because me logging in, it would be in my language. It would be all... Right. And I think, in some ways, CES is like this giant orgasm of stupidity. It's just it's just stuff.
You know what? Can someone please quote Paul on that?
No, I mean,
CES is a giant orgasm of stupidity.
It's really an explosion of individual things for individuals that we're not going to need in a few years.
Yeah.
That we arguably don't even need now, most of it.
Well, you brought up, the whole concept of you being able to some sort of biometric or whatever and just go from place to place and put in your ID, and it's just everything you have in the cloud. I mean, on a much simpler version of that is Continuum, right? The concept of Continuum.
Yes, and actually that's a good example, because just like the Kinect thing I was talking about, it's the first immature look at something that will be more important later when it's fleshed out better.
I was trying to explain that to someone the other day. A friend of mine, he was asking all these questions because he watches the show, but he doesn't really follow it as much. He enjoys the tech stuff. And I was talking to him, and he was like, oh, well, tell me about the Continuum stuff because it's really cool. Like, maybe I want to get a Windows phone for that. I'm like, well, it's not what you think right now. But in a couple of years, I mean, the future is, you have a phone, or you could have something the size of a credit card like this, that this is your phone. This is running everything, and you just connect it from device to device. You just put it in, and everything you have is there. That's really the future of something like Continuum. Right now, I don't think droves of people are going to go out and run out and buy a Windows phone because of Continuum. But in 5 or 6 years, when this thing is developed a little bit better, or even 10 years when this thing, hopefully it'll continue being developed in 10 years. That's where you say, okay, this is the bigger
picture. It's not a device though, right? It's going to be more virtual than that. I mean, today we're all very enraptured by these phones. We sit there and we stare into them and we bump into walls and stuff because we're not paying attention. When everything you need can be everywhere, you don't need the little thing anymore, And there's always some device aspect to it. For example, you've seen like cell phone zombies on phone or in trains or planes or whatever, where they're maybe with a Bluetooth headset or talking to someone you can't see. And before you realize they're on Bluetooth, it's a little weird. You're like, what's that guy talking? And in the future, it's probably going to be some kind of virtual display thing. And it's not going to be like this giant Oculus Rift thing that covers your whole face like Darth Vader or whatever. You probably won't even see it. And maybe it is a little bit like Google Glasses or something, but and maybe it's an implant, eventually or whatever. But, but it's going to be that same effect that people are going to be sitting on a train or a plane with their mouth open, drooling a little bit. And what they're looking at is this incredible immersive thing, And the dumber of these people will be talking out loud to what's in the environment they're seeing or whatever, because we all do that today anyway. And, it's not going to be so much about what you bring with you, although obviously an implant is something you bring with you. But I just think the stuffness, the processor, the RAM, the storage it's just there. Today we have to carry it around.
I mean, think of how many gadgets we have,
Oh,
think of how many phones and how many tablets. I mean, I have like four tablets and I got two phones and I got, you know, two laptops, and I mean, it's just crazy. And the lights are falling behind me. If you notice, it just fell.
I didn't see it.
Look at that. Amazing. I just think that it's we're engulfed in this right now, and we're slowly taking a step back. But you're right. Having one device everywhere will be the answer. But if you were to, you know, when is that a reality? And how does that become a reality?
We get there in stages, you know. It's funny. We used to do everything on computers. We talk about this a lot. You know, one of the reasons smartphones and tablets are such a big deal is they're more convenient form factors for doing certain things that we used to also do on computers. And so in some ways, we used to lug around these computers that were kind of big, kind of heavy, but they kind of did everything. Today, a lot of people lug around a small phone, a small tablet, a small PC. And, you know, maybe the whole thing weighs less than that giant PC from years ago, but they, you know, they'll do certain things on each device. And there's some complexity to that, but, you know, people obviously are falling in love with certain kinds of devices. And I think, you know, it's just a maturation process. I mean, even in computers, it's, you know, thinner, lighter, smaller, whatever. Are you trying to fix the light back there or something?
I am.
I'll just keep babbling.
Jesus Christ.
Microsoft something. Devices.
Look at what happened. Look at this.
Your whole office is falling apart.
It is. You know what? That teaches me a lesson to try to put this up hours before the show. Next time, I won't ever do that again. No, listen, when you look back at this, right, you look at CES and you look back at all these events and all these announcements that are happening, the bigger picture, you know, like over the last 5 years, we've gone from bendable e-ink, you know, displays to now. Yeah, obviously, it's not on the market, but now we have, you know, full HD res, you know,
well,
color,
for example,
displays.
You saw this, I'm sure. New York City is replacing public pay phones with Wi-Fi hotspots that are going to have an iPad-type screen on them. I think it's actually an Android tablet that people can use to get directions. And I think they can make phone calls on them. I think they can make like Skype-style phone calls using the free internet. And so, you know, that's a very good example of, again, it's early days, but it's a public thing. It's a thing. It's like a physical thing that we can sort of recognize, a tablet, you know, nothing super futuristic to it. But compared to what was there before, that's a big change, right? I mean, that's a very interesting change. And you can sort of, it's not hard to extrapolate off of that. You know, what do these experiences look like in the future where maybe you don't have to be tied to this specific pole that has, you know, a Wi-Fi hotspot in it or whatever, that, you know, you as a person in New York City could walk up to many walls or many locations and kind of access this information using a much more virtual interface.
Yeah, I mean, you know? Listen, we're a little cynical here because we cover this stuff and there you go. It falls right again. Jesus, I give up. We're a little cynical about this stuff, but to the layman, you know, some the technology that we've seen change in the last 10 years from 2006 to now, it has to be amazing. I mean, you look at cell phone technology and wireless, you know, internet speed technology and just things like that. It's a very different world from 10 years ago. Go back 20 years, 1996 was none of this existed.
No, to the tune that, you know, 20 years ago plus, you know, if I decided to drive across the country or if I left people that I know somewhere in Europe and went somewhere else in Europe, communicating with them was basically impossible unless it was an emergency and I could make a, you know, what do you call it? Like a person-to-person call. Will you accept the charges? You know, that kind of thing. I mean, obviously, as connectivity gets better, it really opens up the possibilities and makes the world smaller.
I mean, you look at, because, you know, 20 years, my kid's going to be 20 years old, right? I have a newborn now. Sure. So 20 years from now, what's the technology going to be like in her life as a 20-year-old? I mean, you think about that, right? Like when in 20 years ago, 1996, we had the internet. I had the internet, but it was, I mean, just not what this is.
It was dial-up and it was
dial-up,
terrible.
You had BBS.
Gray
web
pages with blink tag. And
I mean, it was very raw. Very rough around the edges. You had computers, right? 1996.
No, but back then you could say something like, look, I could imagine the world's books being online and I could read them because the internet was largely text-based and that was very easy to imagine. You know, the reading of books that come from online makes a lot more sense when you have a cool little device to read them on, you know, like an ebook reader or a phone, obviously, or a tablet. 1996-ish, and actually as late as 1998, I bet, I remember writing about the Windows 98 Plus Pack came with a CD player application.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And it was for playing music CDs. And I often talk about a friend of mine from Phoenix back in this day who was a very early proponent of MP3 files. And I remember, you know, sort of seeing like, this is really neat, but an album, if you think like 5 megabytes or whatever it was per song, an album of 10 or 12 songs, 60 megabytes-ish, whatever, however that worked out, I don't remember the exact numbers, that's a significant portion of the size of my hard drive.
Yeah.
At the time. This makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
You know? And so storage becomes basically infinite. You know, that's a big change. And as bandwidth speeds increase, the resolutions of displays increase, we're moaning here in 2015 that we don't have enough 4K content.
Isn't that amazing?
And we think about it. We have plenty of HD content, stupid amounts of SD content that nobody wants anymore. Imagine I have thousands of DVDs that I ripped to the computer in H.264 format. They're 720 by 480 or whatever the resolution is or less because of the widescreen. And man, do I not want to play those on an HD TV. And a UHD or like a 4K type television makes an HD TV look like crap.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's a completely different world.
I mean, and look at it at the other side, right? Like I have a TV. Technically, we're doing television right now. You're in your house in Dunham.
Right.
I'm here in Bayside,
exactly.
Queens.
Yep.
We're talking over Skype. We have a whole production. I mean, not good production, and our set is falling apart. But that
completely amateurish.
But technically, I mean, if you really think about it, we're doing a television or radio show from our living rooms from our offices.
One of the big gags we did back in the 20 years ago when cable modem first came to Phoenix is that same person, the MP3 guy, Brian. We were, because it was so unsophisticated, they didn't know what they were doing. If you signed on, I think it was Cox Cable, in that first 6 months-ish, maybe more, you could go into network neighborhood in Windows 95 and browse everyone who was online. And if they had shared folders, you could access them. And if they had a printer shared, you could print to their printers. And he used to print stuff onto my printers as a joke. He used to print naked ladies sometimes. So I'd be sitting there and the printer would start.
Here comes the print.
You know, what's that? It's like coming out and you're like, oh, geez. You know, it's like, love, Brian, you know, that kind of thing. It's so different now. We could still prank each other with naked photos. We would just do it via Skype or whatever.
Yeah, you know? Do it over Skype.
And it would be instant, you know.
It's amazing. And those are the cool things. I mean, it kind of ties into CES. I mean, how technology changes over the years and how things improve and the bigger picture of it all. I mean, 20 years ago, we were happy that, you know, to get on AOL. And now it's... You know, we're upset.
Yeah, your
when
daughter's
Skype
going to be
down.
Complaining because the virtual holodeck environment that she uses doesn't have, you know, 800K content or whatever we're going to call it. I mean, you know, it's going to be something totally goofy.
It's crazy.
But if you know, again, bandwidth, storage, processing power, those things become infinite compared to what we have today. And, you know, it's not hard to imagine some of it.
I think it's amazing. Guys, we have a lot to talk about. I do want to bring up this BlackBerry story that came out today that I want to touch on a little bit. But we do a post show after the show each and every week. It's called What the Talk. Paul and I hang out and we talk for about 15, 20 minutes. And it is available to the people funding us on Patreon, patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us there. Anything you want to fund us, nickels, quarters, dimes, dollars, whatever it is. Whatever you want us to have, you can fund us there, patreon.com/whatthetech. If you're watching live, obviously, we are not turning off the feed, so you can watch it for free. Also, you want to help the GFQ network out? Guys, use our Amazon link, gfq.co/Amazon. That's gfq.co/Amazon. That's weird. Something happened here. gfq.co/Amazon. Bookmark it, and whenever you buy something, we get a tiny little credit from it. It helps us out. You got to buy diapers, guys. Got to buy a lot of diapers for Paul. Paul needs them. It's okay. Nobody's
sure.
judging. Nobody judges here. Paul, did you see the BlackBerry story?
No, although based on your little blurb here, it's not super surprising, I guess.
Yeah, they are they're looking into slowly phasing out BlackBerry 10, which is QNX.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was a great operating system, and I think people think I'm nuts when I say that. But that BlackBerry
I'm sure that's true, and it was just too late. It's a bit like Windows Phone. It was a bit like WebOS. You know, they had some really neat things.
You know, we hear that a lot, like the Palm Pre, for example. People say, like, well, if the Palm Pre came out, you know, the year before the iPhone,
it couldn't have. Yeah, that was not happening.
The only one of the few devices that I actually believe the saying when they say, well, if only it came out a little earlier, BlackBerry really could have had a chance because they had such tremendous market share, even when the iPhone came out. For a while, they had market share.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where
yeah.
they really could have retained a lot of them if they had put out a smart device that did everything that the iPhone did and had a decent ecosystem. And they stuck to that 10-year goal that they had, which is insane if you think about it. That they were going to stick to this goal. I think they were totally blindsided with this iPhone. I don't think they even thought it was a reality. And when it happened, they...
By the way, that's everyone.
I mean, that was everyone.
Let's not, you know, we can rag on BlackBerry. We can rag on Palm.
Palm attempted, right? I mean, they were quick to respond. They responded within, what, a year?
Yeah. I mean, so... it's a very nuanced story. I mean, part of the reason... that thing didn't do well in the market is that it had constrained resources. It was only on T-Mobile, which was terrible at the time. They basically spent every cent they had developing it, so they couldn't go much further with it or market it very well. You know, by the time it came out, I don't remember the exact specs, but if you know, just pretend it had like 1 gig of RAM, if that's possible at the time, it was probably something much smaller. But if it had had 2 gigs of RAM, that device probably would have been pretty great. You know, it was just not quite there. But the UI was awesome. It was so nice.
Yeah, it was great. But the BlackBerry stuff, you know, I had that Z20 for about 3 months, and I used it every day, and that became like my daily phone. I really liked the phone. I mean, the camera was pretty good for the time. It was a 5 megapixel camera, but it was phenomenal, the display, the photos that it was taking. It was just a really good device. And it's that is a shame. And the only thing that you could blame is the company and its structure and the idiots that are running it that couldn't adapt quick enough. But going to Android, I don't know if that's going to help them in any way.
It's too late. You know, it's just too late for them. I this is something when they made the decision, they bought QNX. They kind of dabbled around it a little bit. They did the tablet UI first, or the tablet OS first, and then they kind of adapted that into BlackBerry 10. They lost time doing that stuff. If they had decided to go BlackBerry right away, maybe things would be different. Yeah. One might also argue that Android wasn't secure enough at that time for that to have worked or whatever. I mean, I'm sure there were all kinds of factors there, but it's just too late. It's not a factor of the quality of the stuff. You know, just like it isn't with Microsoft and like it wasn't with WebOS before that, it's just too late. You know, the quality is there. There's some really good ideas. And that's too bad.
So I have a question for you, Paul. I mean, since we're doing like this retrospective of things from the past and now, the iPhone came out, what, 2008?
Seven.
Seven, yeah. Okay. 2007. Well, the next one, right? The next one was the one that everybody wanted.
Okay.
Right.
Well, the next one was the one that was actually available. You know, in different places. Yeah.
But when that iPhone came out, right? Okay, 2007. Mm-hmm. If I had told you 2 years prior that Apple will be putting out a phone that's going to change the entire mobile business, who would have believed me?
It's hard to remember, right? But remember, the thing that's important to remember is that leading up into 2007, they were actually kind of kicking ass with iPod, and I think the expectation was that they would make an iPod-type device that could make phone calls, you know? I don't know. It's not so super far-fetched. I mean, if you go back to 2001, I mean, I think it would be like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, this company is barely alive. By the time 2007 came around, first of all, everyone was widely expecting them to come up with something. The iPhone blew everyone's expectations out of the water, I would say. But I think we had the expectation of phone, that like a phone was like the next natural thing for them to do. Thankfully, they did not use the click pad on it. That would have been weird. But yeah, I mean, I don't know.
It's interesting. I mean, it's fascinating how it's evolved. It's fascinating. So we had that. Is there anything that stood out to you from CES?
No, I mean, I'm privately kind of interested in the drone stuff, mostly for photography purposes. Although I think drones are something that's going to be really annoying to most people. Sort of like the selfie sticks that can fly. There's some car stuff going on. I think it's really interesting. We seem to always be in the we're almost there with the in-car entertainment stuff, CarPlay, Android Auto, you know, whatever the QNX stuff is, which, you know, by the way, has a future in the car at least.
Yeah.
That stuff is always very interesting to me, and it's one of those things, like, it's never quite there, but it seems like it's always kind of about to happen. Obviously the PC stuff is happening. There's nothing great there, but I follow that because, you know, that's my market, but nope. I think that's most of it, you know.
And then we have another show coming up? What's coming up soon?
Another trade show?
Yeah.
Mobile World Congress in February, and that'll be for smartphones primarily.
It's amazing how that one became really, really primarily strong.
I've almost gone to Mobile World Congress many times. I've still not been, and I love Barcelona, so it's stupid that I don't go. It's usually almost always in Barcelona. I guess it is Barcelona. And for, you know, several years in a row there with Nokia, it was very big for Windows Phone releases. I'd like to go this year, but I it's hard to justify. I don't think there's going to be – I know Microsoft will announce the Lumia 650 there. I'm pretty sure that HP will announce their Falcon phone there. I don't think – I don't know that those justify a trip to Europe.
I think anything justifies a trip to Europe.
I know, I was just thinking the same thing. But
what are you saying?
I have to justify it to the guy who pays the bill. I'd like to. You know, I'd like to do it.
That's a story. All right. Time to wrap it up. Go to our website, jfknetwork.com, Therat.com, all things Paul Therat. Paul is amazing.
Congratulations, by the way, again.
Well, thank you. Maybe I'll get Jess to bring the baby downstairs so everybody can say hello to Taylor.
Yeah.
Jess is exhausted, let me tell you that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
She's very tired.
That's a nice peek at the next 15, 20 years of life.
I told her, I'm like, I can't wait till she hates me in about 14 years. Stomps upstairs saying, I hate you, Dad. You're the worst. Can't wait for that. All right, guys. See you all next week.